Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson. And we've been reporting most of the day today about the concerns with TikTok. And the CEO of TikTok is going to be testifying before Congress today. And China in general and all the concerns that we have. So honored to have with us today Bradley Thayer, the director of the China policy there at the Center for Security Policy. He's widely published author on a broad range of U.S. national security concerns and the co-author of the latest book entitled Understanding the China Threat. And there's a picture of the cover of the book on the screen for those of you watching on the Dove TV network. The website is centerforsecuritypolicy.org, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Works with our good friend Frank Gaffney there. Bradley, thanks for your time. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Good morning, and thanks for having me on today.
Well, this is so fascinating. Today, as we said, the TikTok CEO will be testifying before Congress. What do you expect from this?
Well, I expect him to disseminate. I expect him to lie and deny the truth about what TikTok is doing in the United States. Fundamentally, TikTok is it's an intelligence collection tool on over 100 million American phones. And so this individual, the CEO, is going to dissemble, and he's going to try to deny the threat that TikTok poses to American national security, as well as to all Americans, and the privacy of data that Americans have on their phones. So that's what I expect him to do. And I expect the committee to really drill down and reveal the deception that he's attempting to advance.
Okay, let's unpack this a little bit. A lot of people are asking a simple question. How is an app a national security problem?
Certainly. Well, easily. If you download TikTok, TikTok is going to hoover up everything on your phone and send it to China, right? So TikTok is going to vacuum up everything and send it to China to be used for their own purposes. And TikTok is not alone. It's getting rightfully a lot of attention, but we should recognize that there are other apps that people may have on their phones that do the same thing as TikTok or that are also other vulnerabilities. So it's a big threat because it's sucking up your data and it's sending it to China. Americans, that's a national security threat, first of all, because of those who are working in the military, in the intelligence community, in U.S. government, or in sensitive areas, in IT or other areas. So all Americans should be outraged about it. It's a national security threat because China is going to be targeting certain individuals for exploitation. And that's a cause of great concern. You also want to recognize that China is essentially assembling the digital mosaic, right? From a lot of things that they're gathering information on through TikTok, other means. You may recall the Office of Personnel Management hack in 2015,
right,
where the Chinese hacked basically the Office of Personnel Management and the record of all of those who have security clearances, right? That was a huge data loss. You'll want to recognize Anthem. The health provider was hacked so that they got health records of a lot of U.S. governmental employees. Hotel networks have been hacked. Airplane travel reservation networks have been hacked. And then Equifax. You may recall the Equifax hack. Of mm-hmm. course, TransUnion, Equifax, of course, are credit providers or services that evaluate individuals. So with this, what are you getting? You're getting big pieces of a lot of Americans, and some of those Americans you're going to be really interested in because of where they work and what they're doing. And you're going to be gathering information on them that you'll want to exploit now or in the future. So it's a serious problem that we have. It's an incredibly pernicious device. And of course, it was something that would be unthinkable in the Cold War against the Soviet Union. We would have never allowed the Soviets to generate a technology that vacuumed up all the information about Americans. That would be absolutely unthinkable. But yet here we have it with China. And a last major point to make on this is that China has a variety of laws that they've passed, 2017, 2019, 2020, which compel any Chinese entity to share information with the Chinese government if the Chinese government requests it. So there is no privacy. If you have downloaded anything associated with China whatsoever on your computer, on your phone, that entity is compelled, if China's government requires it, the Chinese military, intelligence services, or else, or other areas, if they request it, that entity is compelled to share it. So there is no privacy. China does not respect privacy laws, and you'll see the CEO is trying to stress, oh, it doesn't matter because we keep data in the United States, right, with Americans supervising it. Well, that's only part of the story. In reality, that data is also shared in China, and thus is certainly liable to exploitation. There is no privacy if you have a Chinese app on your phone.
Wow, there's a lot here. Let me just go to one more level, and then we'll come back. How is TikTok being used to propagandize or at least target young people?
Well, it's being used because of the messages and the opportunities it provides young people to share messages, of course, with each other. But the news feeds that the essentially that TikTok is providing is one which is not essentially ennobling. It's not seemly, or it may not be, obviously, depending on the user. So it's often said that you want to compare TikTok in China, where it's very martial, where it's very patriotic, it's very nationalistic, with TikTok in the United States, where it's the reverse of all of those things. That's a very important point to consider. But also we want to keep in mind how the Chinese can send messages to those who are using TikTok news feeds, for example, information about elections. For example, information about electoral candidates or position on or issues that Congress may be taking, et cetera. So it's a powerful tool for election manipulation. Again, we would have never allowed this with the Soviets, and yet here we're allowing it with the Chinese.
So do you, when the CEO testifies before Congress today, we're not really expecting him to say anything that you've just shared with us. So he's going to do his best to defend its current position. But do you expect that committee also to call someone to testify, such as yourself or somebody like you with this knowledge, to counter what the CEO may say?
Absolutely. There'll be those who counter. I think we should expect that Congress moves ahead with legislation that bans TikTok, as many states have already done. And which is simply good advice for all of your audience. If you have TikTok, delete it and get a new phone. That's really what you should do to separate yourself from it and to be very careful about apps that you download. So I think we'll see in relatively soon legislation to ban it. But that's only part of the problem, right? We want to follow what the Indian leader did. Modi is his name, and he banned all Chinese apps on Indian phones. And that's what we should be thinking. That's where we should be heading, to have that universal ban of any app that was generated by a Chinese entity.
So, Bradley, do you think we could actually, we could pass legislation to ban it? Can we actually erase it? Can we really get rid of it out of America?
Terribly difficult to do, as you know. Your segment about the phone, right, where that fellow found the phone
right.
in the river
right.
and was still able to get data from it, very difficult to do. Once they've got the data, it's on their networks. It's going to be very difficult to ever erase that. So the best thing is, as we move ahead, simply do not have it, and to have a sense of awareness about Chinese apps and the dangers that they pose.
Do you expect, well, I guess what I'm hearing you say, you're expecting us to ban it in the United States. How do we enforce that?
Well, it would be through legislation, of course, and I think the legislation would contain other elements as well, I think, to help tighten and to increase awareness in this respect. But it would be obviously something that you could do for U.S. government employees, for example, right, or U.S. governmental contractors or anybody interacting with or taking money from the U.S. government. Essentially, there could be an element requires them to essentially not have TikTok on their phone or other apps. But your point is a good one, right? It's going to be difficult to get all of them, and it's going to be difficult to enforce. But nonetheless, I think individuals who are concerned about the China threat would recognize the vulnerability that these apps are posing and act accordingly.
We've been talking about the threat, the country and various agencies and groups. We've been talking about the threat of China for quite some time. You wrote a book about it. And we're starting to see more and more the problem with it. Are we too late in trying to get something done about it?
Not at all. I think that we need to recognize in our country the tremendous strengths that we have and that we can marshal against China. And also, we need to recognize China's profound weaknesses and take advantages of those weaknesses. This competition takes many forms: diplomatic, economic, technological, outer space. All of those are venues, but it also is fundamentally ideological. It's a question of who's going to set the norms and rules of the 21st century. And the U.S. has tremendous advantages because we offer freedom. We offer a better, far better alternative for most of the world's population than China does. Additionally, the Chinese government is illegitimate. They're a communist dictatorship that came to power by force and ultimately stays in power by force. And the communists know they're illegitimate, and they have tremendous vulnerability with the Chinese people. So if we take certain, if you will, measures in political warfare, we can work very hard to unseat them and recognize globally, really, that they're a pernicious force.
Even though that they can change the value of their currency within a whim, their economy seems to be very fragile, on the edge. Their people are at the point of revolution. We've watched Hong Kong get squelched, but the spirit's not dead. I would say that internally they got civil unrest at a level that we don't understand.
That's right. They have profound economic problems. We have trouble, to be sure, no doubt. But they have profound, in many respects, deeper economic problems than we do. And those problems just quickly are bubbles in real estate, bubbles in traditional industries like cement and steel, the legacy of COVID, environmental destruction, and the pernicious consequences of their rapid industrialization, which affects their economic growth, profound corruption in China, which serves as a brake or a fetter on all economic exchanges. And they've recognized this. They've lowered their growth rates. The Chinese Communist Party is lowering its official statement of how quickly it's going to grow, or the targets at which it's going to grow. No longer 9% or 8%. They're now saying about 5%. In reality, that will be less. So they are really on an economic plateau. And that, again, undermines their position among the Chinese people. You may recall the white paper protests or blank page protests from November and December of last year. And you can see that the Chinese people are just fed up with the Chinese Communist Party, and they're looking for alternatives. They're looking for freedom. They're looking for, if you will, a return to what made China great. In terms of its political principles. And the Chinese Communist Party is a Western import, right? It's Marxism and through Leninism is coming out of the West, and it was forced on China. And China can never be great as long as it's led by Marxists, by communists.
Yeah. All right, let me take a quick break. So honored to have with us today Bradley Thayer. Check out his book called Understanding the China Threat. There's a picture of the cover of the book for those of you watching on the Dove TV channel. And their website is centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We'll take a quick break. Got some more questions when we come back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Back and honored to have with us today Bradley Thayer, director of the China Policy there for the Center for Security Policy. Of course, we have Frank Gaffney on quite often. This is a wonderful organization doing a great job. You can go to centerforsecuritypolicy.org. There's a picture of the landing page. And also check out Bradley's book entitled Understanding the China Threat. And there's a picture of the cover of the book on the screen. Bradley, I'm going to ask you a question. It may sound political. I don't want it to be. I'm just trying to figure out, are we positioning ourselves to not only understand the China threat, but to oppose it? But it appears now that there's huge evidence that the current administration is compromised in dealing with China. How big of a problem is that?
It is a fundamental problem. And the problems of the Biden administration are a symptom of problems that affect so many countries around the world. The Chinese recognized at the end of the Cold War that they were going to rely on economic cooperation with the U.S. and other Western states to serve as a gigantic market for the West. And in return, businesses were going to be quite willing to invest in China and manufacture in China. A consequence of that was China used, if you will, Wall Street to leverage political access. And so the problem that we face today is that countries around the world have gone through, including key allies like Canada, Britain, France, Germany. We can just go down the Japan to a large degree, Australia. The Chinese leverage economic might for political influence. And so they also targeted politicians for essentially sharing wealth, as we are seeing with the Biden family, where there was money transferred to Biden family members. Well, that's true of so many politicians in the West. And as a consequence of that, what Peter Schweitzer calls elite capture, the Chinese have essentially bought the elites of Western countries, so many of them. And sadly, it's a bipartisan problem. Biden administration is obviously profoundly touched by this. But with regret, Mitch McConnell is too, and some other Republicans. So the issue that we need to face is fundamentally separating ourselves, taking China out of Wall Street, no longer allowing Wall Street to fund Chinese firms or to fund the Chinese Communist Party and the People's Liberation Army, which is what they're doing. And as a consequence of that, also reduce influence in our domestic politics. So the Chinese advance along all azimuths through technological means like TikTok, through essentially bribery of politicians, as we're witnessing with the Biden family, and then with using Wall Street, powerful industries in the United States to also garner political support for China. And it's not just Wall Street, but Silicon Valley. It's academia, our universities, it's our media, it's our foundations, so many centers of influence, even Hollywood, right? There was a time where Richard Gere could make a movie in support of Tibet and to call attention to the suppression that the Chinese communists have implemented against the Tibetan people. That day is long gone, right? Now Hollywood is in the pocket of the Chinese Communist Party. So this is a profound symptom, a dangerous one, obviously, because it's the president of the United States, but it's a huge societal problem. And the solution begins with awareness. This is what's happening, and now let's put our shoulders into it and reverse it.
Previous administrations saw it as a problem long before President Trump ever became president. He segregated China out as being a problem. Becomes president, he goes after it pretty strongly. Now we have another administration that seems to be compromised. There's a couple of things that come out of this, Bradley, that leave me kind of on tilt. One is, as you know, part of doing business in China was the giving up of intellectual property. The question there is, how serious is that, and how much of our intellectual property can turn around and bite us because the Chinese now own it? And secondly, of all the things that they have over the top of us, the one that concerns me is the most is that they seem to be the major supplier of pharmaceutical supplies to the United States. I mean, if we ever get into a problem with them, they cut that off, we're in trouble. What's your take?
Two very significant issues, and absolutely right. Those are fundamental to our security. Engaging with the Chinese entity or doing business within China required the transfer of intellectual property by legal means. They also stole a lot of intellectual property, obviously through illegal means. The Department of Homeland Security estimated at the end of the Trump administration in 2020 that there was about somewhere between $450 and $600 billion worth of technology that the Chinese have stolen from U.S. firms alone, not to say about German firms or French or British or others. So that is a tremendous fill-up to them. For example, they stole so much information from Boeing, for example, in the effort to generate their own airliners. So a big problem, and we need to make sure that businesses do not transfer technology in any form to China. Again, that's going to require awareness and real sanctions against them. Your point about medicine, spot on. This is a gigantic problem. We learned that China is making vitamins and ingredients for vitamins, amino acids, everything that goes into so many of our pharmaceutical products or vitamins that people take, and medicines, as well as personal protective equipment, the PPE, which became so famous, of course, during COVID and in the years since. China is making it and they husband it. Well, that was a huge vulnerability. Not being able to make penicillin in the United States is egregious, right? The idea that we're not making antibiotics in the U.S. because it's cheaper in China, despite the profound national security risk that that generates, is one issue that the Trump administration tried to reverse, and the Biden administration has not been supportive in this regard. So the consequences, of course, for us, if there is another pandemic, are very significant. We need to address that. There are certain goods and services that should only be made in America or by very close U.S. allies. And personal protective equipment, medicines, other pharmaceuticals, and medical equipment, to name just a handful, should be considered strategic goods that would be made only in the United States.
Mm-hmm. To that end, also, Bradley, we know that fentanyl is coming across the border at unbelievable amounts, killing hundreds of thousands of people in this country, and it's coming from one place, China. Fentanyl, even though they're making our pharmaceuticals, they're also making a drug that's killing us. And it goes, I don't know how they get it from China to Mexico and then across the border. But you would think that we would target that alone, and we don't seem to be touching that. But fentanyl is clearly being traced back to China, or am I wrong?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, they're feeding the opioid pandemic, which plagues our hospitals, which is a curse on the American people and American healthcare. It's ruined millions of lives. It's killed hundreds of thousands of Americans, and it continues, where the Chinese make precursor chemicals, send them to Mexico, where they're easily assembled, and then transited over an open U.S. Southern border. And so this is should be considered a chemical weapons attack directed by China against the United States, and it should be treated accordingly. Sadly, as you know, it's not.
Yeah.
The opioid pandemic is not seen for what it is, as pernicious as the COVID pandemic.
One last question. I want to get you back. You're fascinating. Thank you for your time. A couple things here, folks. Check out Bradley's book called The Understanding the China Threat, and, of course, their website, and support them, the Center for SecurityPolicy.org. I want to come back to China's civil unrest and the economics and what people are now being fed up with. I don't know, can the citizens push back the CCP? Or is the economy going to allow that to happen, or are they going to run out of food?
Well, they have the Chinese Communist Party and its leader Xi Jinping have the profound problems. They know that they're illegitimate, and they've imposed their rule on the Chinese people. To some degree, they generated a degree of acceptance by promising economic growth. But that happy time for them is over. As we have discussed, China is plateauing economically. And that means, really, it's quite likely they're going to start to decline and retrench. China's going to be getting poorer in relative terms than they have been thus far. That is going to be perhaps the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of what the Chinese people can accept and are willing to put up with. At the same time, China is a superpower as a surveillance state. The Chinese government monitors their citizenry very effectively. We were talking about TikTok, of course, and its dangers. Well, the Chinese essentially are monitoring their population very effectively through apps, but also through, obviously, IT networks. And they generate, I'm sure you've heard of the social credit score, right? You're essentially graded in terms of how good you are as a loyal and obedient citizen to Xi Jinping's rule. So they very effectively police their state. And so that becomes very difficult, and it's very hard for Chinese citizens to act in that environment, which is truly a panopticon where you're monitored so closely all the time.
Isn't it interesting, last comment, that what China is dealing with economic insecurity, civil unrest. It's also happening in Russia, Iran, and then today's news, Lebanon is collapsing their economy. So these totalitarian governments don't seem to be keeping it together.
Not at all. And it's they're to blame for it. It was their political malpractice and their economic malpractice, which is causing Western firms to now recognize, why should we put up with corruption in China and theft of our property, intellectual property and other properties, when we could produce goods in the U.S. Or in the West or in Indonesia or in India, better environments?
Right.
And so the Chinese have only themselves to blame, and it couldn't happen to a better bunch of folks. It's just a pity it doesn't happen sooner.
Bradley, thank you. You're fascinating. Love to have you back. I want to say thank you to you and Frank and the team there at the Center for Security Policy for what you do. And let me say to our viewers and listeners, check out Bradley's book there, Understanding the China Threat. And, of course, their website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Thank you, Bradley, for your time. Look forward to having you back.
Welcome it. Thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.